He said he would shake up Springfield. I think he's shaken it up. The problem he has is that Mike Madigan, 40-year member of the General Assembly, 30-plus-year member controlling the House, has dug in and has simply said he's not willing to change things. Governor Rauner's making some good, significant changes outside of that legislative process and some within, but it's been an uphill battle. It seems that the House Democrats are fixated on winning their primary and general elections rather than doing what's good for the state of Illinois. In the meantime, Chicago is in turmoil. Illinois is in turmoil. We have to keep plugging along, but it's indicative, I think, of their attitude by looking at just last week. Last week, both chambers were scheduled to be in. Senate went down. We did some work. Proud to say we appointed two new trustees to the ISU Board of Trustees, Bob Dobsky and Marion Lauterbach. Good friends of mine and good people who will do a good job, as we know Bob has, and they've both been very involved. But we did some things that needed to be done, but we also needed to further discussions on finishing the spending plan. I'm not going to tell you we'll ever have a 2016 budget, but finishing the spending plan that needs to be done for this year. Mike Madigan decided to cancel session, which further delays any opportunity we have to do the right thing, and we've got to get that done.
We'll get to more on the turmoil in just a second, but what do you view as the governor's signature achievements in that first year?
Well, I think, A, he said he's not going to allow the Democrats to continue to tax, borrow, and spend in deficit order, and has said, you know, you've got to come to a reasonable solution on a balanced budget. He's held the line. A lot of pressure on the governor to do this, but he's held the line. I think successfully he's negotiated with multiple union organizations contracts that are affordable to the citizens of Illinois and help to protect Illinois by a good quality workforce. I'd say unemployment insurance reform was a signature issue. I served on a bipartisan task force to bring about changes that will better protect workers who are laid off and better protect businesses from unemployment fraud, prohibited billions of dollars in speed bumps from costing Illinois more jobs. We were able to accomplish that. I think one of the biggest successes he had was the $1.6 billion budget shortfall in last year's budget, reaching a compromise. I think he built some bridges, but and thought we built more bridges with the Democrats that would lead to other things. I think it has led to a better relationship with Senate Democrats. It just seems that House Democrats don't want anything to do with any reasonable solutions.
Are we better off, though, as a state today than we were a year ago, given the pain that the turmoil has caused?
Well, I think we all knew that things were going to get worse before they got better. Under Governor Quinn and Governor Blagojevich, the can was kicked down the road. We accumulated over $110 billion in unfunded pension liabilities. We've had over $7 or $8 billion in unpaid bills. We saw a severe decline in higher ed funding, which is not only troublesome for people like me who represent geographic areas that support campuses and employees and students, but also I think troublesome when it comes to long-term economic development. These are very troubling issues. Our infrastructure is crumbled under Quinn and Blagojevich. We knew that there was going to have to be a day of reckoning, and that day of reckoning would not come easy. We didn't realize that Mike Madigan would be such an obstructionist to reasonable reforms and changes. We didn't realize that AFSCME's leadership would be the one standout, holdout union.
Why didn't you realize that, though? Because in other states, the union provisions have been the deal breakers in Wisconsin, in Indiana. And
that's a fair statement, Charlie, except for the fact that multiple unions have agreed basically along the same principles. So when the state goes in and negotiates with the multiple unions that they negotiate based on resources they have, what they can do, and so forth. There's also causes, though, in many of those negotiations when they come to agreement that says if you give another union significantly better different. There are things called Me Too provisions in those contracts, which means those unions that have come to the table reasonably would have a right to go back and get what the other unions received that was significantly higher than what they did. Those unions that we've negotiated successfully realized there were limitations in the state and did this. AFSCME is wanting more than we have. You know, who wouldn't love to give what AFSCME would like, but it's 27% higher than what other states are already paying, what the private sector is paying. It's higher than what multiple other states are paying. And it would cost us with the unions who've already agreed that there's limited resources. I thought that once one or two or three unions realize the limitations and how this would work as a win-win for both their members and the people of Illinois in general, AFSCME would realize the same thing.
Last summer, many people thought that the likely compromise would be shaped on workers' comp changes coupled with a tax increase and significant spending cuts. That didn't happen. The union issue became the holdup for the House and for the governor as well. Where is the way forward now?
Well, that's a great question. It goes back to the obstinance, the stumbling block, the lack of willingness to work together on the part of the House Democrats led by Mike Madigan. Senate Democrats, as I said, I've had numerous discussions with them, and they're willing, I think, to work out a reasonable solution.
Where are they going that Madigan is not?
Well, I think they're willing to talk about reasonable pension adjustments. They're willing to talk about workers' compensation reform. They're willing to talk about property tax relief. They're willing to talk about allowing local governments to establish local prevailing wage, particularly on contracts that may be smaller.
But they're not willing to talk about the collective bargaining issue, are they?
Well, that's the same thing. Prevailing wage sometimes ties into collective bargaining on smaller contracts. They've said we're open to these discussions. To the best of my knowledge and to the best I understand it, the House Democrats have just been obstructionist, and Senate Democrats have not. This isn't a partisan issue, to tell you the truth, because of the discussions we've had with Senate Democrats. Now, they may not agree, but they realize that there's got to be some compromise, that the state of Illinois is regressing in this state of uncertainty.
Senator Jason Berrickman came to our studios not long ago and said another area that is a potential chip is the Chicago city budget and Chicago public schools, that perhaps state help on those issues could be useful in generating a compromise on some other things. How do you see that? Is that on the table too?
There's no question that Chicago's in a very difficult situation. Unfortunately, right now, they can't even focus on their financial challenges as it affects their school children and their city and the other things that are affecting it because of this huge racial turmoil over the police department and the law department and what appears to be some pretty severe mishandling of some deaths and situations. But there's no question that helping Chicago solve its problems, not at the expense of downstate, but in ways that are equitable, is an important part of the solution. As I've always said, as goes Illinois, as goes Chicago, so goes Illinois, but as goes the rest of Illinois, so goes Chicago. We're partners in this, and we need to work together, and there can be some benefits in leveraging that.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with State Senator Bill Brady about the situation in Springfield. Since the governor and the House Speaker are not really talking, and you've alluded to slightly warmer relationships between Senate Republicans and Democrats, is the icebreaker going to have to come from the Senate side, from the Appropriations Committee, not just the four tops and the governor? And if so, how do the committee, the appropriations committees, structure it so that everyone can get together and declare victory?
Well, until the House Democrats come to the table, they've got a supermajority vote. There is no way to pass a measure without House Democrats coming to the table and embracing a compromise solution. And to date, there's only been one House Democrat who's been willing to work with Republicans
Ken Duncan
on this issue. I shouldn't say that. There's other House Democrats who've been willing to work on some issues. He's the one that seems to be at the forefront of that willingness. The good news is right now we're beyond the first of the year, which means we no longer need a supermajority to pass something. But I think the posturing is they are threatened by the success Bruce Rauner had in the last election and the effects that may have on future elections for Democrats. I frankly don't get why they're dug in so much, because typically in presidential years, Illinois is stronger for Democrats. It doesn't appear there's a lot of threats to any Democratic member in a primary, at least unusual threats to any Democratic member in a primary or general election.
A few here and there, but for both parties, most districts are safe.
But no reason not to come to the table and try to move Illinois forward. It just doesn't seem. But it is what most of the insiders say is the obstacle that the House Democrats and the Speaker have to bargaining.
Well, since we're on the topic of when, some people are saying after the March primary, some people are saying after November. Senate Leader Redonio said last week, well, maybe could last all the way through the governor's term. What do you think?
Well, it could, unless the Supreme Court rules that what the lower courts have ruled is inappropriate. And the lower courts have ruled that almost all of states' spending, with short of higher education and some social services, need to continue regardless of the constitutional requirement that the legislature pass a budget, which to me is absurd. I think there's a good chance the Supreme Court would rule on that. If asked me, and let me say this, I hope they do, I support the governor in declaring an impasse based on what I know. I hope Ask Me doesn't strike. I'm told that from some members of Ask Me, it'd be very difficult not to strike. That could bring a pressure point as well.
So why is the pressure necessary, though? The Democratic verbiage on this is hostage taking, and that's obviously harsh, but it's going to play out in campaign rhetoric that way if this continues.
Well, I don't know what you mean by hostage taking, but what I will say is something's got to happen to bring the House Democrats to the table.
Are there positives to offer him to show up rather than negatives?
Well, the governor has said that he's willing to help put votes on temporary revenues that feed much of what the Democrats want when it comes to spending. He realizes that they've overspent and that it's very hard to contract all the way back. But there's a middle ground to reforms that help grow Illinois' economy and grow revenues, and interim, short-term revenues to supplant some of the areas that are very hard to cut. That is one huge compromise for a Republican first-term governor. I don't know if I could support that package. I'd have to see it, but I've never voted for a tax increase in my life, but we need to move forward, and there's things I'm willing to do if we can to make this work as well.
Capital Facts political correspondent Rich Miller took a look at a memo that the governor sent to GOP lawmakers about the impact of his turnaround agenda last September. The memo, Miller's treatment came out recently, though. The memo didn't really say much of anything about revenues other than if the governor could get Illinois to average levels of unemployment and gross state product, and if the governor could stop the migration of Illinoisans to other states, his agenda would produce about $510 million in additional revenues. Well, that is significant, but it won't cover the interest on the overdue bills that have racked up because the state has no budget, which leads to the: is the pain that we're going through worth the cost?
Well, there is no other solution. If we saw under the Democratic 67% tax increase that Pat Quinn and his Democratic cohorts passed, we saw, I think, the largest out-migration exodus of business jobs and people that we've ever saw in the state, and we saw the highest racking up of unfunded liabilities. So you cannot tax your way out of this problem. I'm not going to argue with Rich's revenue number. I think it's higher than that. But what Rich fails to take into consideration is by putting those people to work, that generate the revenue in this environment, you create less reliance on government spending. So there's also a positive impact on the expenditure side that he's not taking into consideration.
State Senator Bill Brady, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be with you.
I'm Charlie Schlenker.